So we've kind of hit the bullseye today with schedules and things going on to where not only do we have communion, not only do we have potluck, not only do we have the privilege of the choir singing and Tasha coming up and speaking to us and sharing with us, but today, as it lands on my preaching schedule, is the weekend after tax day, which, if you're familiar with how we normally would spend our weekend, our sermons, it's, you know, we're going verse by verse through a book of the Bible. And when we do that, we don't always get to touch, you know, kind of the certain topics that maybe you'd like to hit once a year. So on my preaching schedule, once a year, the weekend after tax day, is when I plan to preach about everyone's favorite topic, money. And so, I didn't plan to preach on money in light of everyone's tax refunds coming back, but I just, you know, we'd pick a day and we'd roll with it. So this is that day. And so April 21st of 2024 is our money day, I guess we'll call it. And so, more specifically, what I wanted to do today was talk about the groundwork of giving. You know, we with Tasha being up here and just with its, you know, something in the church that, you know, we do each week. We do the offering. We do all this. But at the end of the day, you know, we want to focus on why we give. Because I think a lot of times it's a forced kind of white-knuckled reaction to, well, we have to do this. We, you know, we really, really, you know, twist our arms almost into giving sometimes. So today I just wanted to do a very simple but important look at what giving, the offering, at why we as a church use our money to support what God is doing. And to do so, we're going to do that in three questions. And if you look on your bulletin, they're pretty simple. What is tithing? What is giving? And why does it matter? And so I'm just going to begin by hopping right in with what is tithing? So I think when we talk about giving, we talk about all money in the church, we hear the phrase tithing a lot. We hear the, you know, the 10%, that seems to be kind of the universal standard. Even people not in church at some point have probably heard the word tithing. And it's, I mean, it's synonymous with 10%. In the Hebrew, it literally means a tenth. And so, again, anytime you talk about money, giving, you know, we have this idea that we're called to tithe. We're called to give. It's our Christian duty to give 10% per se. But what exactly does it mean to tithe? You know, where do we get this from? Where do we pull this idea from? You know, we didn't just grab a random Hebrew, Greek word out of the Bible and say, well, that's how we're going to base all of our giving on for the rest of eternity across all Christian churches. And so what I want to do is we're going to hop between a couple passages that really I'm going to read them mostly for us. So if you just want to follow along in that. But we're going to go back to the Old Testament. And I'm going to read from us from Genesis 14. And what we're going to get from Genesis 14 is the answer to our first question. What is tithing? You know, when does tithing occur? How did it happen? And so for context, in Genesis 14, we are in the land of Israel during Abraham's time. So we're many millennia ago. And Abraham had just had the conversation in Genesis 13 with his nephew Lot. And what they were doing was they were, you know, back then it was all just wells and cows and how big can our herds be and all that. And so what they were doing was they said, all right, we got a lot of cows, you know, we got to split. You know, we can't have this many cows on one section of land. And you're probably wondering, well, when are we going to get to giving? But what's going on is their herds were getting too big, so they needed to split. And so Abraham said, you know, I'm going to go that direction and you go that direction. And, you know, we can kind of get out of each other's hair. And so Lot ended up going his direction and he ended up in Sodom, a familiar name for the Old Testament, which was bad news because in Genesis 14, the king of Sodom gets defeated in battle. And who's there to get caught up in the battle? It's Lot, Abraham's nephew. And so in that defeat, Lot, Abraham's nephew, and all his possessions are carried off. And so Abraham, being the good uncle that he is, I'm going to pick up reading in Genesis 14:14, which says this. When Abraham heard that his relative had been taken captive, he called out the 318 trained men born in his household, and he went in pursuit as far as Dan. During the night, Abraham divided his men to attack them, and he routed them. So we're just getting a little history here. Pursuing them as far as Hobah, north of Damascus. Verse 16, he recovered all the goods and brought back his relative Lot and his possessions, together with the women and the other people. After Abraham returned from defeating Kedorlaomer and the kings allied with him, the king of Sodom came out to meet him in the valley of Shavah. Then Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was a priest of the God Most High, and he blessed Abraham, saying, Blessed be Abraham by God Most High, creator of heaven and earth. And here's the verse we want from this, Genesis 14, verse 20. And Melchizedek said, And praise be to God the Most High, who delivered your enemies into your hand. Then Abraham gave him a tenth of everything. And so that is the first biblical instance of a tithe, you know, a 10% being given to a priesthood of sorts. And so Abraham went out to battle, saved his nephew, brought him back, met Melchizedek, and he said, This is a priest of God. I'm going to give him 10% of our loot. And so it says, interestingly, in verse 18, that Melchizedek was a priest of the God Most High, which is just a very Old Testament fancy way to say he served God. You know, well before the time, well before Israel was established, there was this priest who served the one true God. And it says it was Melchizedek. And so, as we would know from tithing, you know, we kind of know it's just giving money to the priest, giving money to the church, whatever. This was kind of the first tithe. And so we're kind of getting a little bit further on our answer of what is tithing. But in the long and short of it, Abraham gave this random priest king 10%. So when you think of tithing, kind of here's where it starts. And in giving this, Abraham would kind of precursor the system we're probably more familiar with. And so I'm going to flip with, let's see, to Numbers 18. And this will be, again, if we've never opened a Bible in our life, this is probably where tithing will come most clearly. In Numbers 18, verses 20 through 24, and I'll read them for us. And so listen for the familiarity of this. The Lord said to Aaron, You will have no inheritance in the land, nor will you have any share among them. I am your share and your inheritance among the Israelites. I give to the Levites all the tithes in Israel as their inheritance in return for the work that they must do. And so essentially God is telling Aaron, the leader of the priesthood of Israel, he says this, You, because you're serving me, because you're doing all my work, because you are working on my behalf, I'm just going to tell all the people of Israel to just give you 10%. Because you can't get a full-time job, you can't be a priest and do this, so the moral of the story is, I'll just tell everybody else who isn't a priest to give you 10% of what they have, and that will be your income. And when we think of tithe, we think of the church, that's kind of the idea that we have nowadays, is that tithing is just providing for those whose full-time job is serving God, serving the church. And God even says this is a lasting ordinance for generations to come. And so Israel always did this, and I guess, kind of when Christ came, the church picked it right back up. 10%, sure. And so names and responsibilities aside, God is essentially telling Aaron that since you are doing this, this is how you will be paid. This is how you will be recompensed in your service. And so, that sounds a lot more like what we would know tithing to be. We use the phrase tithing, giving the 10% to the priest, giving the 10% to the church, to God, whatever. And again, I think if we're honest, this is probably the attitude we've had towards giving in church most of our lives. You know, we've had this is what we're commanded to do, this is how much we're commanded to give, and this is how frequently we're commanded to give. And that's just kind of the first thing anybody thinks of when they hear about church and money is, it's command, command, command. And that's what it was in the Old Testament. God commanded it. The command was 10%, and it goes to those who minister before God. And so if that is the basis for our commitment to tithing, I want to give us a few more short passages that if we're going to follow the Old Testament that we have to consider. And the first one, and don't flip to it, I'll read it for us, is Deuteronomy 14. The Lord says this, Be sure to set aside a tenth of all that your fields produce each year. Eat the tithe of your grain, new wine, and olive oil, and the firstborn of your herds and flocks, in the presence of the Lord your God, at the place that he will choose as a dwelling for his name. And so to give you the context in Deuteronomy 14, God is saying, you're already giving 10% to the Levites. Now give another 10% so that when the festivals come around, Passover comes around, the festival of booths comes around, you have to travel up to Jerusalem, you need 10% kind of like a vacation savings plan. Because when that time comes around, you don't want to just save all that money on the spot, so I'll plan it in advance. And so what that should tell us is that not only do we save 10% for this, but But we save another 10% in Deuteronomy 14. And he says again in Deuteronomy 14, 28 through 29, at the end of every 3 years, so this is an annual, this is every 3 years, bring all the tithes of that year's produce and store it in your towns, so that the Levites and the foreigners, the fatherless and the widows who live in your towns may come, eat, and be satisfied. So if you're following along, that's another, every 3 years, another 10% God is commanding Israel to give. So every 3 years, they're giving 30% of their income. And so if we were to just take that every 3 years and divide it out, we'll just say it's annually 23% is what God commands Israel to tithe. And so now that I've kind of confused you with a lot of Old Testament passages on tithing, I'll answer the question, our first question, what is tithing? Tithing in the Old Testament was a method of taxation that God gave Israel to serve the priesthood, to serve the orphans, the fatherless, the widows, and to provide for the annual festivals. And so if we as Christians want to hold to the Old Testament term of tithing, and we tithe in our lives as, you know, how we give back to God, and that would mean every year we should be giving 23.33% of our total income to the church, to God, to whatever. And as I can imagine, that's probably not a very popular idea for most of us. And so that's if we go strictly off of God's command to tithe. But the reality is, we as Christ followers, we as Christians are not called to tithe. We are not commanded by God to give certain percentages, certain amounts, on certain days, to do certain things. But the reality is that all changed when Christ came, bought us with His Holy Spirit, saved us, and has given us His Holy Spirit so that we can give how we are called as Christians to give. And so I'll move from what is tithing to what is giving as our second question. And this study, this chunk of the study, will be really short and sweet. As I said, there isn't any explicit commands in the New Testament on how to give, on how much to give, on how frequently you should give, on what percentages to give. Nowhere. Nowhere in the New Testament is there a black and white, you must give this on this day, on this percent. Because that goes completely against what it means to walk in the Spirit, to be moved by the Spirit. And so we'll take Paul's piece of advice as we look now at our passage we read before in 2 Corinthians 8:1. And Paul says this when talking about giving. Brothers and sisters, we make known to you the grace of God which was given to the churches of Macedonia. And so we can assume the Corinthian church asked Paul a question about giving. They were talking about giving. And what Paul said is, well, let's look at the churches in Macedonia. How did they give? You know, they're filled with the Holy Spirit. They are truly following Christ. So how did they give? And he says in verse 2, for that in a great ordeal of affliction, or, you know, a great persecution, a great, you know, their life was rough, but yet their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality. And Paul says, I testify that according to their ability, and even beyond their ability, they gave voluntarily. And he continues on saying that they were practically begging to give. And so I'll note just five short things about the Macedonian example to illustrate how we as Christians are called to give, how Paul wanted the Corinthian church to give, and in turn, how we are supposed to give. And so again, the five things. Number one, verse 2, it says they were joyful, that in a great deal, ordeal of affliction, they had abundant joy, meaning that they gave from a happy and cheerful heart. There was no arm twisting. There was no, wow, this one's really going to be a pain. You know, this one's really going to hurt. You know, I don't really want to do this, but God commanded it. But no, they were abundantly joyful, even despite their deep poverty. It says, despite, in light of their deep poverty, they still overflowed with how liberally they gave. And so our first principle for us, that when we give, we're called to give joyfully. Second principle, they gave according to and beyond their ability. Verse 3, for I testify that according to their ability, so according to the wealth that they had, and even beyond the wealth that they have, they gave. And so just as they gave joyfully, they gave proportionally to what they had. It wasn't you know, I mean, in the fullest sense of tithing, you know, 10% would be proportional to your income. But the reality was that they went above and beyond because they gave out of what they had, knowing the love they had for those to whom they were giving. And so that tells us we give according to and even beyond our means. Principle 3, end of verse 3, it says, they gave voluntarily. Now that goes pretty much the exact opposite of what the phrase tithing would command. Tithing is a commanded 10%. But yet, Paul says the example is that we should follow the Macedonians who gave voluntarily. There was a desire in their heart to give. They weren't strong-armed by the church. They weren't strong-armed by leadership. They weren't strong-armed by other Christians. But it's what the Lord put on their heart, a desire to give. And that is exactly how we are called to do it as well. Not commanded, but voluntarily. And in that voluntary kind of idea, the fourth principle, which verse 4 gives us, they were practically begging us with much urging so that they might participate in supporting the saints. And so what that tells us is that they were going almost, you know, they couldn't get the money out of their pockets fast enough because they wanted to support what God was doing. They wanted to put their money where their Christian mouth was. They wanted to know that, hey, this is what God is doing. I know if my money goes towards this, the eternal reward will be infinitely more than anything earthly I could use this money for. The example was that they were, I just see it as practically tripping over themselves to fill the bag that Paul was going to bring to the church in Jerusalem, which is why he's writing to the Corinthians. They were tripping over themselves to get money into that because they knew it was God's work. And they knew the blessing that God promised in that. And finally, our fifth point, so I'll run back through them. They were joyful. They gave according to and even beyond their means. They gave by their own accord. They were eager to do so. And finally, all of this comes from verse 5. And this, not as we had expected, so this was completely against what Paul expected, they gave themselves first to the Lord. And so this pulls all four principles together in the reality that they gave joyfully, beyond their means, of their own accord, and eagerly because their heart was with the Lord. They had first gave themselves to the Lord and then gave themselves to Paul and his offering because they were committed to God. And that's really the bulk of why any giving is done. All the principles aside, all the, you know, Macedonian examples aside, the reality was that if we give ourselves first and foremost to God, not just in our own heart, not just in a relationship with Him, but we give to what He's doing around the world, to what He's doing at, you know, at K-State in India, to what He's doing in, you know, even our community. We put our money where our gospel mouth is, and then it shows our commitment to God. And I think I've probably said this before from up here, and I'm sure Pastor Dick said it before as well, but it's, you know, a Christian, you want to see if somebody, you know, what their priorities are, what their goals are, what their plans are. You can often tell looking at their checkbook. Because how they are spending their money shows where their desires, their heart, their priorities, their goals, and their commitments are. And this doesn't supersede paying rent, paying a mortgage, paying insurance, providing for our kids, providing for our families, providing for our lives. That is all something that is important and that God has provided for us so that we may do. But beyond that, and much following the example of the Macedonians, we are called to give joyfully to what God is doing. Because we know that we're not just throwing money away and calling it good, but that we are contributing to how God is saving souls. We're contributing to ministries in which God is reaching college kids. God is reaching kids here in Blue Rapids. God is reaching people all over the world. And we don't have to travel with them to do that. We can provide for them. Which is, you know, if we take the Apostle Paul's example, we know that he is somebody who affected the world tremendously. And all of his missionary journeys, all of his times he wrote his letters, were all when he was being supported by the church, by people that he was reaching. Because he knew that if he could focus on ministry and have his other needs met, then he could be used effectively for God. And so finally, I'll just wrap us up very quickly with our last question. Why does it matter? You know, why talk about money? You know, everyone's favorite topic. Why sit on this? Why address this? Why give each week? Because the reality is that our giving is a direct representation of how we view God. Our giving is a direct representation of how we desire to see God work, not just in our lives, not just in our kids' lives, not just in our community, but to work in the money that we give, and the money that we provide for missionaries, for pastors, for gospel opportunities, local and abroad. Because we as Christians don't follow the, you know, I read you from Deuteronomy, I read you from Numbers. We don't follow the Old Testament law. We're not called to strictly adhere to it because we are, you know, Christians now. But we're called, as Galatians 6:2 says, to follow the law of Christ. The law of love. The law of giving generously, loving generously, giving and loving in such a way that we look exactly like Jesus Christ. And not just in our giving, but how we speak, how we act, how we love, how we work, how we raise our kids, and all the above. And so this, I don't want today to be a, oh, you know, we got our money talk out of the way. You know, we're all good now. You know, we can move back to 1 John, and you guys will actually be thankful we're still in 1 John for once. But the reality is, it's today's just taking a magnifying glass on our lives. And, you know, and open and honest as possible, just saying, all right, how are we doing this? Because that's something that my wife and I commit to do, is to, you know, watch diligently, fervently. What are we committing our funds to? How are we following this example? And asking that question, you know, why do I give what I give? Why do I not give? Why am I doing this? Why am I not doing that? Because knowing the answer to that is exactly what it means to continue to dig into, invest, and understand your own faith. And so, as Paul said to the Macedonian church, that they gave themselves first to the Lord, that is my encouragement to us, even as we move into this time of communion. How are we, with our finances, but even beyond that, with our lives, giving ourselves, as verse 5 says, to the Lord, and because of that, being able to give ourselves to others?